The ColoradoHockey.com podcast returns with part two of Sarah and Liz Go to the Movies. For hockey fans, fanatics, and freaks, especially if you're an Avs fan or a Red Wings fan, the epic battles between these two teams are forever etched in our minds. Without further ado, Sarah and Liz go to the movies to watch The Russian Five again.
Anyway, so this is part two of the Russian Five conversation. Liz and I went to see it again today, which is awesome. I'm glad that we had an opportunity to do so.
I am too.
Before it goes away, which we know it will soon.
Mm-hmm. All good things too.
Yep. I'm really, really glad that we went and saw it again. I feel like I caught so much more this time. And like, obviously the story is the same and all of it's the same, but I think that it really allowed me to focus on the players as the people that they were.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, we talked about this last night and just last night, and that was kind of the perspective that I was going into it with, which is kind of cool. It's interesting to see that that conversation shaped the way that I viewed the movie.
Yeah, it definitely changed different things for me too.
So what was the biggest thing that was different for you this time, or that you noticed this time rather than last time?
It was like, yeah, I listened, kind of paid more attention to the players than I did before, because it was a lot to take in, because like you have to take in the whole story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so this time, since I already knew the story, you could pay more attention to the players. Like, I never once noticed that Vlad never was interviewed. Like, I didn't notice that the first time, and then I just noticed the second time that he wasn't interviewed at all.
Yeah, which makes sense knowing the story.
Yeah, so I was like, there's just little stuff like that that I didn't notice.
Makes sense. I just really appreciated that after the comment of I decided that if people wanted to talk to me, they would have to learn Russian. The first thing that happened is you turned to me and go, but he's you.
Yep. It's true.
And maybe that kind of colored the perspective, but the more that I watched him, the more that, you know, it made sense why I liked Kozlov, because he's me.
That's a fact. I really like, he's you. I'm just going to leave it at that. He's you.
No, don't leave it at that. I want to hear more. Why do you feel like that's me?
Because it just is. Like, there's certain mannerisms people have. Like, I'm pretty sure that I have to be Sergei Fedorov just because of the level of mischief as a whole. But it's like, he's just you, because it's like, you would do that.
Tell everyone to go fuck themselves because I don't want to learn their language.
Like, even when he was like doing the interviews, like, you know, he had to know English, but he just chose not to do it.
Mm-hmm. And only spoke in Russian for the documentary.
Right. As a, I also feel like it's funny because it's like, at the same time, it's kind of like his way of getting back at them for not speaking Russian to him. That he's going to make them sub all of his parts in this documentary.
Yes. I strongly appreciate that.
Well, and that's funny because it's like, we have like our group of friends and everything, right? And it's funny because like, of the five of them, like, I could see some of our friends like in them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the professor is obviously Jen.
Yes, this so is fair.
It's funny.
Sweet and like nice and ridiculously smart.
Yes. And so it's just funny that like, you see people, I see that it's not more the second time, that like you see other people you know in these people, whether it be like mannerisms or whatever. But I'm just like, oh, I get why you guys were friends, because like, these are my friends.
Right. I mean, I totally agree with you. It was fun to be able to see that, and it was fun to be able to focus on them rather than on learning the story.
Yeah.
Also, that Kozlov pigeon goal, I've made that move. I love that so much.
Dude, but there was like three in a row.
Yes. I did not execute at the level that he did, obviously. And I will never be able to execute at the level that he did. But I appreciate that he was a shady little shit and a pigeon.
You're the Pez dispenser. That's all that matters.
Yes, that's true. Whip around, Pez dispenser.
Yep, it should.
The goals you shouldn't get.
Pretty much. And I did. There was other things that, like for example, there, like the part specifically about the like 97 brawl or whatever, and how they're talking about like the Avs were the only people playing this really physical kind of underhanded game. And I'm like, yo, this game is reran all the time. Like, I've seen this game at least 10, 15 times, and there's no way that y'all are as innocent as you think you are.
Well, yeah, and I made note of that too, because, you know, we talked about the fact that this was hearing it from the Detroit perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how time and perspective can put a lens on it, because like you said, the comment was something like, well, Colorado wanted to play it that way, but you do see it wasn't just them. Yeah, and did they come out a little bit more physical? Absolutely. But they talked about like 30 seconds before that, the fact that that was exactly how every team was playing against the Red Wings and playing against the Russians in particular. And so it's really interesting that the commentary and the, you know, many years later commentary was, well, Colorado was doing that. And so, you know, it's all them that caused this riot.
Yep. And it's funny because the entire thing was started by Igor, like, fighting Forsberg.
Like, yeah,
he legitimately started the entire thing.
I mean, Forsberg definitely helped.
I know, but it's like him initiating that fight is what started all of that.
Right.
So it's like, bro, come on now. Like, by definition, the fact that you started this means you are as big of a part in participating about this.
Right.
As they were.
Uh-huh. 100%. Well, and you see all the footage, and they're given as good as they're getting, too.
Yeah.
And, really, like, you know, it was interesting, though. I mean, they did selectively choose the footage, which, like you said, I've seen at least parts of that game 100 times from 100 different angles. And they were very selective about what they showed in the film.
Yeah. And I get it, because, like, it's not supposed to be about, like, that game. It's about, like, their journey as a whole. And, like, I'm into that. I respect that. But
coming at it from an Avalanche fan perspective, it's a little frustrating in some ways. And I'm more frustrated by the perspective that they had on it watching it this time around than I was the first time. Yeah. I think the first time I had more of an appreciation for having that other perspective, but this time I was just frustrated by it.
Yeah. And it's like, I appreciate, because it's funny because, like, I feel like most people are like, oh, you're only saying that because you're like a total homer or whatever. And I'm like, nah, fam, like, Claude Lemieux deserved to get his ass beat. Like,
yep.
That's the long and short of it, is that he deserved to get his ass beat. Because what he did is shady as all hell. But we all know he's shady as all hell.
Right.
He's a perfectly nice guy off the ice, but he is like a very gray area in quality hockey.
Well, and the thing too is that, like, it could have that whole situation with Draper and, you know, Lemieux putting his face into the boards could have been avoided. If it had been on the glass, that would have been a fine hit. Yeah. I mean, it would have been a little bit underhanded and shady. I'm not saying it would be a perfect, clean, by the book hit by any means. I am certainly not saying that. But it wouldn't have had the same kind of impact, because the way that he hit and the way that Draper went over the boards was what caused the problem.
Yeah, and it was really, like, and I, you probably heard me say it while we were watching the movie, like, it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
But, and it's like,
really hard.
And I get why. But, and there's also, like, I was mildly infuriated, and I was entertained by it the first time, and I was entertained by it the second time, but I also got a little mad about it when I don't remember who it was that slipped the hit from Adam Foote and then just put his face into the board.
It was Kozlov.
God damn you.
It was.
But, like, was like, that was such a smart play, but it was as shady.
Right.
Like, you don't just randomly shove someone's face in the boards, right? And it's like, it was hard enough that, like, there was blood.
Oh, yeah. Footer was bleeding like crazy.
So it's like, that's a definition to me of how, like, and it is funny and it's very smart. Like, that is an awareness that most people don't have.
Well, because it wasn't just avoiding the hit. And I think it would be a completely different story if Kozlov had just avoided the hit and let Footer go into the boards. But he straight up grabs the back of his head and pushed.
Yes. And I mean, it's funny because that's brilliant and very
on your quick on his feet to think
it
about.
It is. It's and it's very like older brothery, like. Very much bullying your younger sibling so that mom doesn't see.
Right. Slightly shady.
That was, ooh. You bet if that happened now, I'd be hopping my happy ass over the glass and squaring up, man.
I mean, both of us, let's be completely honest, I would be right there with you.
We're close enough to the bench, I feel like we could do it.
Ask Mike. One of us will get there. The other one just distracts.
Drop our shit with my mom. Be like, Mom, hold this. We're going to go fight.
Yep, pretty much.
The 2 5-foot nothing. Tiny humans taking on the 6-foot plus everyone.
We could do it, man. They'd be so surprised they wouldn't know what was coming at them.
Right?
They'll never but also they wouldn't be able to see us.
Exactly. We're below them. They won't be able to ever catch us. Slip under the radar.
Or at least under eye level.
Goddamn right.
Mm-hmm.
You better beware.
I do miss that style of hockey, though, in some ways. Like, obviously not people getting hurt, but...
Yeah. I miss the physicalness of it. Like, I know people are like, blah, blah, blah. The violence has no place in hockey, but it's like... The coming from a soccer background, when you're defending someone, you always play the ball,
right?
Because you can't move fast. Like, that's just what you do. But it's like hockey, the nature of defending in general is to play the man,
right?
So it's like you need that level of like physicalness because it makes the game more like exciting,
right?
We don't need the like, you know, shoving people's faces into the glass. We don't need someone checking your face into the boards, but it's like that physical style, like ZZ plays, is like I feel like it needs to make a comeback.
And I think that it might to an extent, but definitely only to an extent, because I think that we have so much more thought around injury, and you know, honestly, we're erring more towards being. I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but we're being too soft with it, and or I guess too hard on it when you think about like the penalties and stuff. We're making a bigger deal out of it than it needs to be in some cases. And I think one of the more frustrating things for me is that it's inconsistent, which means that there's no clear path forward for either bringing that back or having that be something that actually is by the wayside.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's, I don't know. I feel like kind of just the culture has just changed in general, like where it's kind of going more towards like the perfect example is what game was it? It was someone that pisses me off. I complained about it because someone behind me was being a total douchebag. It was a game where the guy behind me told me this one player was better than our entire team.
Sabres, because it was Jack Eichel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
better than our entire team.
Yeah, that when he got hit because his head wasn't on a swivel. Like when your head is down, like those kind of hits, like they're sad, but it's like the fact that a player who's supposed to be like one of the best players in the world is not disciplined enough to keep his head up kind of speaks to like the level of play that you get, you know?
Right.
Like, and then he comes back with an elbow against Soda Butt, but I'm like, all right, let's square up. I don't like you anyway. Come on.
Well, and everybody cried about it too. Like, well, why did he get suspended and get a hearing and all of this shit for this when Zadorov didn't after that hit?
Yeah.
Like, it was a little late, yes, but it was clean. You just can't keep your head down.
But like, what? And that's the frustrating thing is like, I don't want anyone to get hurt. Like, I don't like hits to the head. None of it. It bums me out. I don't like that. But at the same time, is like, there is no reason a player who supposedly is good as Eichel should ever have his head down like that, especially for how long it was down. Like, it wasn't like a bad timing thing. It's like he's literally skating up the ice with his head down. I'm like, right. What is wrong with you?
I mean, that's something that I still do because I am not, you know, somebody who's been playing hockey for my entire life and someone who knows better. Like, that's something that you should have the discipline to do when you've been playing the sport the vast majority of your life. Mm-hmm. And like you said, are supposedly one of the best players in the world.
Oh, he's better than the entire Avs. Okay. Like our entire team. He's better than all of us, but he can't keep his head up.
Yeah. That's so frustrating. So frustrating.
It drives me crazy.
So I do want to touch on the mental game a little bit more. So we talked about this a little bit already about the response to the Draper injury and the fact that the Avs just completely steamrolled Detroit after that. And I kind of want to go back to that because that was something that I paid a lot of attention to this time. Mm-hmm. Because it was something that we were talking about and I was able to focus on the response from the team a little bit more and listen to them talking about how it, you know, took all the wind out of their sails.
I'm like, yeah, I am still sympathetic about it. Like mm-hmm. I am. Cause again, I come from an athletic background too. So it's like when someone on your team is taken out like that, like you feel it, especially mm-hmm. when it is someone like Chris Draper who has that leadership about him that is probably not as appreciated as it should be.
Uh-huh.
So like, I get it that it takes a lot out of your sails, but at the same time, it's a testament to how, I guess, unprepared they were for that level. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah,
like, it was they have to rally past that mm-hmm. because there's no option but to rally past that.
Right.
And as soon as they don't, it just speaks to the level of immaturity that they had to overcome.
Well, it was 100% a mental failing. And yes, they admitted it, but it was completely mental at that point, because for all intents and purposes, that's the time when a team rallies. Mm-hmm. Right. And I would argue in many cases, immature or not, that's the time when a team rallies because fuck you, everybody. I want to show you blah, blah, blah. Now that you've hurt my person, you know, and even if it's, you know, being more physical, if it's instigating fights, if it's doing all of these things, I mean, we even see that with the Avs all the time. And I would argue we're not a team that comes back and, you know, revenges well. Or avenges, whatever word you want to use. But you still
see revenges.
Yes.
I'll stick with revenges.
You still see that attitude shift, and it's not complete defeat in most cases.
Well, and it's a good example again. I think I mentioned it before, where it's like with the Avs having Mikko and Landy gone, they're both gone. Like that's two of your arguably the better players all season.
Not even arguably.
I like to give people room for their opinion. they're two of your better starters.
Yes.
Was like those are huge hits to take.
Right.
And yet, like, arguably bigger than losing Chris Draper, which is one human.
Right.
Like, you lose your captain
mm-hmm.
and your giraffe.
Right.
And so it's like, but here we are and we're coming out with the majority of the points in the games we're playing because there are other people that have decided that we're not going to be defined by losing those two players. And I feel that's the fundamental thing that the Detroit Red Wings in that period did not have.
Right.
Like, you can have Fedorov stepping up, but it's like, what is one person going to do? He can't carry every shift, mm-hmm. every second of that game.
Right.
So it's like, it's just a fundamental disconnect between like wanting it more, I guess. Like, they just assumed like, oh, well, Chris Draper, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So now Like, okay, you only have like the five best Russian players in the league. You have Stevie Y, you have Nick Lidstrom. Like, come on.
Right. I mean, they had a killer
more
team.
Than enough talent to fix this.
Right. But it speaks a lot to the mental progress that they were able to make. And the fact that, you know, what I appreciated that was the turning point for them was actually splitting up the five.
Yeah.
And I think that that says a lot about what the mentality was on the team and the way that people, you know, I'm going to talk about this again, but were perceiving everything to be. And the reason that, you know, losing one player, granted, it was not one of the Russians, obviously, but losing one player in Draper meant that everything was thrown off because they didn't know how to adapt. They didn't know how to change. They knew one way and one system. And we've got this one line that's going to be incredible. And what do we do if we don't have everything else according to plan? And so I think that that was the smartest thing that Scotty Bowman ever did.
He did,
was
yeah.
split them. And granted, he kept them together for practices, but he made a really smart move there too in, I guess, forcing the rest of the team to scrimmage against them and to learn the way that they would have to be defended against in order to associate or to give themselves the opportunity to have that style of play across the board. And that really elevated the game of everybody because that's what good players are, right? They're not necessarily just, I'm going to be incredible because I'm going to be the one scoring all of the goals. Mm-hmm. It's about elevating the teammates around you. And I think that that was what those five were really able to accomplish in that, you know, that first Stanley Cup winning year for them.
It really was. And like, it's the, it bothers me that there are so many parallels between that particular team and ours now.
Explain what you mean.
Like, they're sitting here and they're talking about how the more the five of them played together, the easier they were to defend.
Right.
And then I'm sitting here and I'm like, when the first line, when Landy, McKinnon, and Mika weren't scoring, we were getting no scoring because the longer they were together, mm-hmm. the easier they were to defend.
Right.
And then sure as shit, Detroit breaks them up, puts the three Russians on three different lines, and then you, voila, you have scoring again. And then literally the same thing happens with us. Bednar puts them on three different lines, sometimes mm-hmm. two, depending on if Mika stays with McKinnon or not, depending on the day.
But right, like, which is okay.
And then you magically fine. Have more scoring. So it's funny that, like, I guess that it wasn't thought of sooner.
Right. Or at least it wasn't implemented sooner, you yeah. know, because I think that coaches are in many ways, and we saw this in the film, we see this with Bednar, I would argue, coaches are afraid to break up what they think was working and what could work long term. Mm-hmm. And that's very often, I feel, at the expense of potential.
It is, because it's like, look at, like, for example, like, putting, I mean, I rag on Worthless Willie a lot, but, like, putting him on the same line as Landy, like, he elevates to be able mm-hmm. to fill the spot as best as he can. And, like, Kerf does the same thing. Like, he plays up to play with McKinnon. Like, mm-hmm. Comfort plays up to play with McKinnon. So it's like, these players, whether it be just them being that good, or whether they spark something in other players, but it's like right. they elevate the games of everyone around them. And it's like, it's the right. exact same thing that the Russians did for them.
Right.
And for whatever reason, it works.
Yeah.
Figure.
Wow. Almost like history has told us that.
I know. Who would have thought, man? Jeez Louise.
And that's why, I mean, it's frustrating to be able to draw those kinds of parallels for so many reasons. I agree with you. I don't want to draw parallels from that team to our team because I've learned to hate them, even though I don't hate them anymore. And that makes me a little upset with myself, but
same though.
I feel
it can't
really
be helped at this point. This is,
I know.
This is our lives now.
I know. I have so much admiration and love for Slava Kozlov now. It's depressing. But if we can draw those comparisons and we can draw these kinds of conclusions after watching a movie twice, what the crap are coaches doing? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, we get so focused sometimes as a whole, as a league, as coaches, as GMs, as all of the people who are involved with moving forward into the future. And sometimes that's not what you need. Sometimes you have to look back and see what historical information has told you. You know, that's the whole point of doing video review on teams. What have they done up to now? How can we adapt so that we can meet that kind of focus or that kind of style of play or this kind of team or all of these things? And maybe that's something that's needed a little bit more. And you know, I certainly found myself wishing that they would do an Avalanche version of this movie. You know, right? We don't have that story, but we still have a story. Can you imagine if they did documentaries like that for all of the teams? How much would you learn about them?
A lot. Well, and like, think of it within the course of, I think it was 2 seasons. Let me fact check this real quick. Let's see, when did this Eric Lindros trade happen? I want your trade. So like, basically the Eric Lindros trade was a turning point for the Avs as a whole. Mm-hmm. Even though I think that happened when they were still the Nordiques.
Right.
So I think it was 92, 93. Mm-hmm. And then 96 rolls around. You get Patrick Waugh. So it's like, in the course of 3 years, mm-hmm. you go from the worst team in all of hockey,
right,
to Stanley Cup winners. So it's like, there's that story there. And mm-hmm. it's very different because Eric Lindros just basically told the Quebec Nordiques to go fuck themselves. And here we are.
Yep.
So it's like, every team probably has that story. Like, I know there's one about Phil of the Flyers that's about the Broad Street Bullies, mm-hmm. which is really good. But it's like, yeah, every team should have something like that.
Right. Well, and I'm sure they do, especially these teams that have so much history. You know, it would be really interesting. And I feel like, you know, we would learn so much about them as a fan base, but also it might be a good reminder for teams to look back.
It really would, because it's like, every team has like that player mm-hmm. that comes in. Like, everyone's going to say that, like, wherever Gretzky went, he changed things. And right. like, sure, he did. But it's like, on the Kings and stuff, like, there's Luke Robitaille, mm-hmm. who was there. And he arguably changed the Kings organization. There's right. like, there's so many players and moves that you can follow. Mm-hmm. And like, this spans what, 15 years from like 89 to 90, almost 20, like
98
to like 98.
Yeah. That's when it like, officially ended.
So it's like, it spans a long time.
Right.
Like, it starts in whatever, I think the 83 draft or whatever it was. Yeah. So it's like, it spans all this time. Like, and ours would span 5 years. It's like, there's got to be a period of time where every play, like, mm-hmm. it's kind of like the revitalization of a team.
Right.
And like, you could even, I mean, the shade's coming, be prepared. Like, you could even do it on the Edmonton Oilers of the last yeah. 5 years. Like, absolutely. They have the best draft classes, mm-hmm. and look what happens to them.
They've
like,
done
they're
nothing
still
with
doing
it.
Nothing. So it's like, that's another good thing that you could investigate. It was like, mm-hmm. what is going wrong here?
Right. Right. Well, and it's cyclical. You know, we see that. We see that teams come into their own and get really good, and then they slip again and they have to rebuild, and then they come back and they get really good again, and then they break back down and you have to rebuild. And obviously we see that more with the long ranging teams. You know, it's a little bit harder to see that cycle for us right now because we're flat in the middle of that rebuild. Right. But with teams that have been around for a long time, you see the cycle occurring. And you can see it with Detroit, right? They were incredibly good in the 50s. Insanely good, ridiculously mm-hmm. good. What was it, like 5 or 6 cups in the span of 7 years?
Yeah.
Like, I say it was something
the best nutball. Team in hockey ever.
Exactly. And then a 42-year drought. But then they were back on their heyday. And now they're going to miss the playoffs again for the second time in the last 2 years.
So sad. So sad.
I mean, I have a hard time feeling sad for them, but
I'm not actually sad.
It proves the point, though, right? Is that this is all a cycle. And if you can take that and you can think about what led to all of that, even if it is that one player trade, it's the one player that either left or came in that made a difference. Mm-hmm. And allow yourself to learn more about that and allow yourself to think about what the impact is and what kinds of changes you had to make and how your style of play had to evolve.
And I think that's honestly like what is at the heart of a lot of the teams that are mm-hmm. stuck. Whether right. even when we hit our drought, it was like because nothing was changing or like the wrong things were changing. Like
right.
you change line pairings instead of like your game plan kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's like, and you could even say that with like Edmonton, they're just stalled. Like nothing mm-hmm. changes.
Right.
They're perpetuate. Like the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Exactly.
But so that's like, they're doing this. They're doing the same things and nothing changes. And then they're still all pissed off. I'm like, well, yeah, change something.
Right. What do you expect? You know, it's like us right now with our defense situation. Oh, we've had terrible defense for so long. Well, okay, how about we spend some time developing them? How about we allow right. them to develop and we put some time and energy and effort into them instead of just saying, well, I guess if you get better, you get better and be great. Ready, go?
Yeah.
Like that doesn't work. Well, and
I think a lot of it also, like I have a problem with like the perfect, like, they didn't force players to play early in those days also. So it's like the players, mm-hmm. and that goes, what you're saying is like, let them grow, let them get better. Cause they're not forced into the draft. Right. Like they're not forced to come play so early. Like you had calibers of people that were like Wayne Gretzky mm-hmm. level good coming in at 18. You don't have, sorry for the shade, Tyson Jost's coming in at 18, 19 years old when they're clearly not ready.
Right. And that's pressure from organizations. That's pressure from a lot of outside sources, I feel. And a lot of that is somebody being too young to actually know how to make that decision for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
they see the, oh, I'm going to the NHL. And then they just don't think about who they are or what their skill set is.
I'm living across from the arena and I'm getting my shiny new Corvette, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's like, it's frustrating because it's like, look at what the Avs did to poor Will Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to come.
So badly.
And he was good enough to have come.
Mm-hmm.
But he would have been on, you know, your last defensive line.
Right.
Getting hardly any playing time and he wouldn't have grown. And so they're like, no, fam, you can't. And look at, he wins an NCAA, wins the
right.
Hobie Baker.
Yep. Yeah.
And then like goes on to be one of like the firecracker defensemen.
Yep.
It's like, and now honestly, if he would have come up when he wanted to, that never would have happened. He would not be the player he is today if he didn't.
Absolutely.
Because like he was captain, like he had leadership responsibilities. He had a lot of weight on his shoulders that he would not have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I think honestly, for people like Jost, for people like Makar even also, that's a pressure that I think will help them grow past anything we're going to do for them.
I totally agree. And I don't like that we're hearing so much about Makar coming up and Makar signing after this tournament is over, because I think that he, for himself and his own growth, could use another year.
I agree.
And I think that he's from what I've seen, what I've read, what I've heard, he has a better head on his shoulders than most kids his age. And I appreciate things like him saying that he wants to give the Avalanche, the team that gave him the opportunity, the chance to take a shot on him instead of doing what Butcher mm-hmm. did and dipping. You know, I appreciate that he has that loyalty. And I'm by no means shit talking Butcher in that case. I understand why he did what he did. There were a lot of factors that went into that. But
well, yeah, that's a Sparks Notes version. Of course, there's a lot that went on behind it that caused shittiness.
Exactly. But I mean, I appreciate that that's the mentality that Makkar has. And I appreciate that he took his team on his shoulders the last 2 years in many, many ways. And I think that, you know, regardless of the outcome of this tournament, I think that that program deserves and he deserves and, you know, his growth deserves another year to see what he can do with that and see what he can become, even though this year has been insanely good for him already.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, and I feel bad because it's like, it sounds like I think Jost is like a waste or something. And like, but it's, he's just too immature, you know, like, and people like Paul Stastny left early. Right. And Jason Zucker left early. And it's like, there's all these college players that leave early, but that's because not only is their play above where they are, their mental status is above where they are.
Well, but I would argue even someone like McKinnon would have benefited from not coming into the league immediately.
He would have.
He frustrates his the hell out of me because he is still so immature in so many ways.
Oh, he does. You hear me bitch about it all the time.
Yep.
Like, it's one of those things that once it's pointed out to you, you can't unsee it. And it was told, I heard it one time, that the play stops with him. And I can't unsee it because it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and a lot of the plays do stop with him because it's like, oh, the whole point is because, I mean, he is the best player. Right. I think he's the best player. Second only to Sidney Crosby, because Sidney Crosby's discipline and perfecting his craft is unparalleled.
Well, and he's had more time to do it, which does make a difference. It plays a role for sure.
But it's like it's the lines have, it's gotten better now.
Right.
But like initially when like the new lines came out and I think it was Kerfin Andrighetto playing with him, it's like the only play was, oh, get it to McKinnon, get it to McKinnon. And then McKinnon will dig around with it and then turn it over. And then, oh, look, there's like another rush the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's changed since then.
Right.
But like on power plays specifically, like unless he's making those passes, the play does stop with him.
Right.
Because he tries to do those fancy dancy, look at my neat little hands. And it's like, there's times for that.
Right.
But he does it all the time.
Right.
And you commented on it too. It's like, it's always the same little dick around move mm-hmm. in the corner.
Right.
Every time. So it's like, that's the level of discipline that he just doesn't have.
Right.
He doesn't have the discipline to make the pass. He doesn't have the discipline to not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that could be being a youngin because he is a baby still. But I don't know what it is, but it drives me crazy.
I don't know, ma'am.
Because he is much better than that.
Right. But again, it comes back to the mental game. And it comes back to the way that you're able to perceive the game and your own impact on it. And it's something that's really hard to understand until you do have experience and you do have the opportunity and the situations to learn how to be that person who can see the game the right way and who can respond to the right way, because you don't just get that magically overnight.
No. And that's what's another testament to McKinnon is like his vision of the game and of the ice is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is unreal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like,
he doesn't know how to make it happen yet.
Like help your, like, there's only so much people can do to play up to you if you won't like let them play up to you.
Right.
Like no one's going to be as good as you. And it's no one's going to be as good as you. But like let them be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like make that pass. Like who cares if they're not there
right
the one time? They're going to be there the next time. They're going to be there the time after that.
Right.
Just it's those little things. And you're probably right that it's going to come with like time because he's getting better about it. He's really bad on the power play though.
Right.
But it's like, it is stuff that's going to come eventually, but the waiting for it to come is just frustrating
right.
beyond anything.
I agree. I mean, I'm really excited to see what he is capable of if he's able to put all of those pieces together, because he does have that vision. He sees the ice so well. His hands are absolutely ridiculous. But because he doesn't have that maturity yet, I would argue yet, I think he's fully capable of it. But because he doesn't have that yet, those pieces don't come together in a seamless way. And so we get choppy McKinnon. We get turnover McKinnon. We get, you know, his hand six steps ahead of his brain, or vice versa McKinnon, because he doesn't know how to put it together yet.
And I mean, I'm sure we'll see that come. Crosby didn't come like that either. The really, I'm sure no one comes like that unless you're like, you know, drafted at like 27.
Right.
And I have to keep forgetting that McKinnon's not as old as I think he is. So it's like he's not even in his prime yet. He's working towards being in his prime. He's still a couple years away from that. So it's like, I feel like I need to cut him some slack. But there's little things like not taking the passes and insisting on doing it all yourself that just drives me crazy.
Right. Well, it's the things that drive me crazy about people like Andrew Ghetto and Jost and all these people that I would also argue are extremely immature.
Yeah.
And I mean, immature may not be the right word for it, but I think that's the closest we can get to a descriptor that fits, you know?
A lot of it's just like a lack of vision for me. Because like the position I played in soccer was like I played center mid. So like you had to run the entire field, basically. Like your vision of the field had to be pretty spot on. And it's people like, Andrew Ghetto is a good one. Wilson's a good one that like consistently make poor choices.
Right.
And I think it's just a lack of being able to see the consequences of those actions.
Right.
Or, and it could just be like a selfishness thing. Like you have selfish Sven and then you have selfless Kerf. So between the two of them, you have the ideal hockey player where you're going to pass at the right times and you're going to shoot at the right times.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, one could wish.
One day. Who knows? One day.
Yep. Kerf's been trying. I will grant him that. He has been trying harder.
He's been shooting. I'm so proud.
Shooting more.
He has.
He's made some interesting passing decisions, but
that's fair. That's very fair.
Also does not go away overnight.
No.
So.
But even like, I don't know, all the youngins, with the exception of Toast, are maturing quickly.
Right.
Toast is still maturing, but it took 100% of, I think, honestly, I think sending him down to the Eagles was the best thing that ever happened to him.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I feel like even if he wanted to join our team, he should have gone to the Eagles for at least a few games.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Because he came back and he has played. I mean, I'm still not happy with how he's playing.
But
I'm not furious with how he's playing.
Right.
Like, I'm not annoyed by everything he does anymore.
Which is progress.
It is.
I like progress.
I'll take what I can get, man.
Yeah.
I really do.
I know.
And it's a testament that he can grow.
Right.
But we need to put him in a situation where he can. And I feel like we're not.
Well, and I think that the other frustrating part about that is that not only are we not putting him there, but we don't feel comfortable trusting him to elevate to a situation where he would grow and mature and elevate, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, you know, you mentioned Kerf moving up to play with McKinnon. You mentioned Comfort moving up to play with McKinnon. Those are two people who, regardless of some of the decisions, because yes, they're still young, yes, they're still learning, but I would make the argument any day that they actively work on elevating their game and they have risen to those occasions and to those situations. And that's something that I have not seen when Jost has been given that opportunity to move up and to be in a higher pressure situation.
I completely agree. But, and it's also, he came from North Dakota where he was a superstar. Like, he was the superstar of North Dakota because, like, he was just better.
Right.
Physically, he was better.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not knocking his skill set at any like way, shape or form. He's a spectacular player, but he's just mentally not there. And that's the like defining difference. Right. Like he came from a situation where he was a superstar and he wasn't there long enough for another superstar to come in. So he doesn't understand that like he's no longer the big fish in this pond.
Right.
He is a mid-sized fish playing with very, very big fish.
Right.
And he assumes he's a big fish. And it's like every player is as important as another player in their own way. But like, he makes very selfish choices. Like instead of paying attention to what is going on around him, he takes it upon himself to make choices like away from the play.
Right.
Like being off sides all the time.
Oh my gosh. That kid. King of offsides.
Right. And I was like,
I don't know. I hope that he proves me wrong. And I hope that he does have the opportunity to grow more because I think that he is capable of a lot more. Yes. I just said that. Alec, if you are listening, I just admitted that.
He does have potential. He has the skills to do it.
Right. But he's got to make it happen. And I don't know that he's being given the opportunity to make it happen for a lot of different reasons. It's not just him. It's not just the organization. It's that perfect storm of non-development.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, if he, even if he wants, like, he could do it here. You know, like, he could. Kerf does it here. Comfer does it here.
But we also don't make a lot of allowances for different perspectives and different ways of developing. And I think that that's something that's been a constant for a long time, is that we have a hard time shifting as an organization in an attempt to develop these players to their different styles and their needs. And I've seen that more. I've seen the opposite of that happening more and more with Toast. Because at many practices, he's been getting one-on-one attention. Yeah. And he's been given the opportunity to learn in a slightly different way. And I think that that has a lot to do with his recent growth as well. Not just getting sent down to the Eagles, but them actually adjusting the way that we're talking to him. And adjusting the way that we're allowing him to grow and develop so that he has that chance. And we're doing it for him, not just, well, this is how we've always done it. So whatever.
Yeah, that's very true. I do forget that. I wonder if like he asked for that or if that just is something that kind of like.
I mean, I think that that's a great question. I think we need to ask Coach.
Yes, I will.
He won't like it,
if I get the chance, I will.
What did he say to you today when you made the comment about the stats? I couldn't hear him very well.
I couldn't either. I think he said, I'll get to it later or something like that. And I'm like, no, bitch, you come back here and fix this. But it's, even if it's funny because it's like, Fedorov broke his ribs, right? And good old Vladdy goes in there and like screams at him, telling him he's going to finish this game. And I feel like that's a very similar situation to like Jost, where it's like, I mean, he's not nearly as good. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
No one's that good. But it's like, someone's got to step up and be like, listen here, you little shit.
Seriously, though. And there's so much.
You're going to fuck up and finish
this.
There's
so much fear of doing that. And in some ways, that's warranted, right? Like, you know that I have a huge problem with the way that Patrick Roy handled Duchesne's 30th goal. And that whole situation.
What did he do?
He called him out in an interview afterward, basically being like, well, we're losing a game and a player celebrates this individual milestone. And I don't remember everything that he said, but that was the moment that you saw that that relationship was broken. And you could tell that there were bigger things happening behind the scenes. And that's a huge part of why I defend Dutchie to this day. And I don't give a fuck who's listening and who wants to argue with me about that. I will defend him. At least to an extent to this day, because I saw what that did to him. And I saw that his attitude changed and he was not getting that support. because I think that there's a time and a place.
That's like, yeah, that's like a gray area for me. Like, I appreciate the fact that like there was a goal, and like I appreciate that you're excited about it, and I really do. Like, it's a big deal, and I think you should be. You know, you're entitled to your celebration. You do you, boo-boo. Be happy. Well,
but he did not celebrate that much either. It was
I honestly don't remember.
A fist bump. He got excited. One of the other players was not asked, but elected to go get that puck for him. Mm-hmm. And that was what the problem was.
Mm. Well, Patrick was also one of those people that you can't, like, winning is more important.
And I get that. I'm all about winning, and I'm all about having that be the team mentality. And I don't think that that was something that should have been overly celebrated by any means. But I also think that especially when you're in a team that's as broken as our team was at that point, you can't push it past that breaking point. And you have to have at least some awareness of the overall situation. Because, you know, with Jost, for example, right now we're in a position where we can have somebody go one-on-one, be like, come on, you little shit, step the fuck up. We know you're capable of more than this. But if that was something that happened in the media spotlight, for example, he's not somebody who could take that. That I don't think, and maybe I would be wrong, but there's a time and a place for it. And there's a way to have that conversation and that step the fuck up and do it for the team conversation that you have to have some self-awareness around.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
It's complicated, and it always will be.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was like. It's complicated.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do appreciate that there's a place for the one-on-one because it makes a difference.
But that being said, I mean, I guess we also don't know that that didn't already happen. And there's a lot that we don't know, but there are defining moments in an organization's history. And we were talking about this earlier. I think that was a defining moment in ours because, like I said, you could see that that was the moment that Dutchie broke.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because it's like there's a lot of parallels. I mean, Chris Stewart was not nearly as good as Jost is, but it's like Chris Stewart got sent down to, I believe it was the Bears at that point. And he got sent down and it was a big reality check for him. And then he came back and played better, too. So it's like maybe it's just like a way to keep the ego in check or something like that, or I don't know, but whatever it is, like sometimes it's just the reality check you need, I guess, you know?
Yep. There's a lot of factors, and I can appreciate that there are a lot of factors, and it's very easy to, you know, armchair coach and armchair GM and, you know, be thinking about all of these things and feel like you have this grander vision. And I certainly don't think that we have all the answers. I would never claim that.
No.
You know, we might be extraordinarily opinionated, but I would also never say that all of my opinions are right. And if we just did what I said, we would be perfect and we would win the Stanley Cup tomorrow. Because I know that that's not the case. But I also think that there's something to be said for external perspective. And I think that there's something to be said for people who are looking back at, you know, 20 odd years of Avalanche history and trends and cycles and all of these things that play a role into where we are right now. And it's very easy on both ends to forget that that perspective exists and to forget that there is some validity in both sides of the story from the people who are in the organization and working and worrying about it every single day, but also from the people like us who technically have absolutely no idea what's going on internally, but who can see things from that other way and can appreciate the nuances because we're not living them every day in the same way. I mean, you and I live and breathe this. Don't get me wrong. I can't say that we don't, but it's a very different perspective. And I think that, I don't know, I feel like there could be so much growth and progress if there was more opportunity for that to be shared and listened to, mm-hmm. which is an absolute tangent from where I was going. I don't even remember where I was going with that, but I just think that that's,
I mean,
just,
I appreciate the tangent. It's
I don't know.
Well, and it's also like you want answers, but like, they're not going to give right. you them a lot of the time too. So it's like, sometimes that other perspective you just mm-hmm. can't get.
Right. And I get that.
And like, and I think that there's has to, like, outside perspective has, like, it's interesting to me that, like, when we talked to Coach specifically about the power play, he's like, oh, no, blah, blah, blah. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. But then it's like, now we're changing right. it. So, like, I don't know if he listens to the outside perspective. It's something that someone came to him with mm-hmm. or whatever. I'm going to joke around and say that it was us.
Yep, totally. 100%.
Came at Coach sideways about the power play, and now it's different. But, like, it's different mm-hmm. now. Because it's like, we're still doing the drop pass bullshit sometimes, but it's like, it's not an every time.
Well, and we've evolved in, like, in some cases, too.
And that's enough, because it's like, you can do the drop pass to McKinnon and then have him pass it to Kerf on the left, pass it to Kerf on the right. And then you have a whole new play. Like, it's enough of a difference to make it not as stagnant and mm-hmm. different. And honestly, it's made a difference, because it's like, I'm noticing that we're scoring more on the power play. Okay.
That's a huge admission.
I'm closer to believing that we're eighth in the league now. But it's like, it's enough to make it not as frustrating.
The movie was so good. We do a real good job of not staying focused, in case anybody did not notice that. Is there anything you want to say to wrap up?
I still have, like, a huge, humongous, big crush on Sergei Fedorov.
That will never change.
No, I love him. Oh, I love
him. He's totally
him.
Got crack kitten face. That little sideways smile.
Oh, I love it. It's a crack kitten yes. tonight. That's good.
Great. So we got the crack kittens and the cuckoo pigeons.
Yeah, right?
I'm not opposed. There are far worse people you could compare me to than Kozlov.
That's true. I mean, and pigeons score goals. Yes. I don't care what anyone says. Unless you were named Blake Como, being a pigeon is not a negative.
This is correct.
Because you are getting points. Yes.
poor Como. Such a nice guy.
He is. He's so nice.
Get the fuck off my ice. I mean, he got the fuck off my ice, so I'm happy about that. But you know what I mean.
That's true.
Yep. All right, that's what I got.
What were your thoughts on the movie? What is your last thought about the movie?
I think it's worth seeing for anybody who has the opportunity. And I know it won't be in theaters for much longer, but I'm really stoked. This is a film that I will go out and I will buy once it comes out.
Yeah, I'll buy it.
Because I have enjoyed it thoroughly both of the times that we've seen it. And I feel like there's still so much more to unpack from it. And I really hope, I don't think that this is going to be the case, but I would really hope that they would consider doing more about other teams, because I think that there could be market for it. And I think that there could be a lot to learn from a series like that.
I agree.
So just tell me who I got to talk to. Let's make this shit happen.
Yeah. Send me your way. Like, oh, you know what'll solve that problem? I just the person for you. Let's do it.
Sarah and Liz do an avalanche documentary.
Rolls up sleeves. Let's do it.
Oh, if anyone can make it happen, it would probably not.
I feel like you're not wrong. I don't know. I feel like we could, but it'd be in a really weird way, like running into Peter Forsberg, getting your oil changed, kind of weird.
Oh, right. I would have to get over my, oh my God, I'm going to pee my pants reaction upon seeing him first, though.
That's fair. Okay, we'll specify. We'll say running into Milan, Heyduke at Dunkin' Donuts. There you go.
That I
can handle that. I don't know. I really like Heyduke. I get a little flustered.
That's fine, but I know how to talk to him. So we're good.
That's fair.
And let's be honest, I would be doing the talking in these situations anyway.
You take Heyduke, I'll take Forsberg, because I'm pretty unfazed by Forsberg, because I just think he's pretty, but I also enjoy how he speaks.
Yes. Yes. Done. Done deal.
There we go. Documentary in the making. What's good?
Woo! Heyo! Yay! All right.
Brought to you by AbsFam.
If you just don't have enough Sarah and Liz in your life and you'd like to follow them on Twitter, check out the show notes for the links to their Twitter pages. Also, if you like this podcast, tell your friends about it. And if you like your friends, you should probably tell them about the podcast. This and every other podcast we do is brought to you by AbsFam, absfam.com. Awesome hockey shirts for awesome hockey people.